And we are off and running. It is a Wednesday, April the 8th, 2020, 4-8-2020, 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride. And we have got a big day here on WWGH Radio. And a big day tomorrow, which we're going to tell you about momentarily as we do a little bit of housekeeping here before we go to our first guest. And this morning, this is a very important hour that we are about to do in regard to children in your life and the current pandemic that we are going through. So pay close attention if you are a mother, father, grandfather, grandmother, aunt, uncle, anybody who has children at home during this pandemic. Now, one thing I want to mention this morning, coming up at 10:10 a.m. till 12 p.m. right after this show, Charlie Evers, our Marion radio icon, who's been in the radio business for more than 60 years, has been out for the past 3 weeks with an arm injury, and he will return after a three-week absence this morning, 10:10 a.m. until 12 p.m. Now, the little housekeeping we want to do in regard to tomorrow's program, tomorrow on this show, to help sort through the news that continues to come out about the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. We will be joined live by one of the good friends of this program. I don't believe he's been on since February, but we will so gladly welcome him back to these microphones tomorrow morning, 9:10 to 10 a.m. We will be joined by the former co-host of ABC's Primetime Live and this week, Sam Donaldson. Sam Donaldson, tomorrow morning, 9:10 a.m. until 10 a.m. So that is the rundown. Now, coming up this hour, we're joined by a gentleman who has been educating children since 1975, 45 years, nearly a half century. He has done so much to help kids understand what's going on with their health. And this week, he released a video, A Kid's Guide to COVID-19. You probably know him best as Slim Goodbody. He is John Burstein. John, how are you?
I'm well, thank you very much. And keeping safe, and I hope you and all your listeners are well as well.
We are, and we express that sentiment to you. John, before we get to the kids aspect of this and where the video, how the video came about, how have you been dealing with this pandemic, which we have never seen before?
Well, different levels. We are home in Maine, where I live, up in Lincolnville, Maine, mid-coast Maine. My wife and my son, who had to return from college, and I are sequestering here. We fortunately live out in sort of a rural area, so we're able to get out for walks. We have seen friends of ours, but always outdoors. We haven't been into anybody's house. This started for us. We were down in the Caribbean. We were down in the Caribbean maybe a month or four, 3 weeks ago. And we have a home down there that we go to for 6 months a year on a small island. And a case popped up on the island. We thought to ourselves, first we were thinking, well, we were down there on this tiny island in the Caribbean. This is not one of the big fancy islands. It's a place called Beckway. We thought, well, we were going to be safe down there because, you know, we're isolated and away. And then the first case came and we realized, no, there is no away. There's no away here. So we left 2 days later to return, and about a week after that, they closed all the airports, and we actually felt incredibly fortunate that we had acted on our instincts. We weren't quite sure when we left if we were being nervous Nellies, or, in fact, it was very difficult to understand that this was such a scary disease. Unless you're in the middle of it, you don't sort of realize it. Now we're all together. The whole world realizes it. Anyway, that's a long answer to a short question. I'm sorry to go on.
No, it proves a point that here we are, John, and we're in the middle of this, and we're told this period that is coming up is going to be a very bad period. As somebody who tours the country, who understands health, who's been doing this for 45 years, did you ever think the United States of America would see a pandemic of this proportion?
No, certainly not. But I'll tell you what really surprises me even more is I would have thought that once we did face it, that our response, given the capacity that Americans have, that our response would have been a little bit faster. I'm talking about in terms of treatment, in terms of, you know, respirators, in terms of masks, all of those kind of things. It's a little shocking to me, you know, when you think about World War II, you know, and how we mobilized so quickly. I guess all I'm saying is I'm a little surprised that the mobilization was not faster. On the other hand, you know, it's easy to be a what if, and we should. I do think that we've made incredible progress quickly. I particularly salute the governors of the states. I think they've been amazing. And it also goes to show you that, you know, so much of politics is local. It's people have really stepped up. So I don't know. I mean, I would have never thought it. You know, you see these movies, right? You watch movies, and they have these, you know, like pandemics and then horrible stuff, and you sit there and you think it's all fantasy, but it is really surreal when it becomes real. Anyway, there you go.
One of the aspects of this has been these new terms we're learning, social distancing, 6 feet
right.
apart. Were you surprised, even when it came, how long it took people to get that? We saw it big time in New York, where the epicenter of this is at this point. But around the country, I still don't know if people are fully adhering to this.
Well, I saw last night they did some kind of drone flyover in certain areas. Maybe it was New York. I can't quite remember. And there were people in the parks, you know, not adhering to it. First of all, there's this anti-science basis that we have in this country now, right? I mean, there is this the sense that experts are lying to people. So you have people who missed it, just do not believe what is being told. There are young people who, of course, who think they're invulnerable. I'll tell you one thing that I'm really impressed with is my son. He's 21. And when we started driving back to Maine after we landed at the airport, you know, he said, well, a lot of my friends are coming back from their schools. And I said, Luke, I'll tell you something. I know you want to play with your friends and stuff like this, but you can't. You can't get close to them because whatever you get, you could bring home. I'm 70 years old. And at first, he sort of glared at me for a moment, like, you know, hey, Dad, you know, I'm going to be with my friends. And then 2 hours later, he thought, you know, you're right. So he just now he goes out with friends, but they're always outdoors and they're always 6 feet away. But I don't, you know, but Scott, to answer your question, I don't know why, what this is. I don't know why some churches down south, you read about the churches who insist that God will protect them so they can still have big social gatherings. There's a lot of ignorance in this world, and there's a lot of prejudice in this world, and I think, you know, it's just, there's a great quote from Albert Einstein, one of my favorite quotes of all time. It says, ignorance and genius, the only difference between ignorance and genius is that genius has its limits.
It's a great quote.
It's a great quote.
Well, yeah. You know, before this all got underway, there has always been this idea, no matter the disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, whatever it might be, that until it affects somebody in your circle, your mind might not be changed on how we should treat that disease with scientific evidence and forethought. Is that what this is? Until you see it, until somebody in your circle will have this, hey, it's not really happening. It's a phony thing. It's a conspiracy. I don't need to be 6 feet away from people. Is there a little bit of that here?
Yes, I suppose that's true. It's also sort of like Vietnam. It wasn't until we saw pictures of the dead bodies of soldiers that, and of course, many of your listeners are too young to remember that, but it brings it home to you. Part of what's bringing this home to most people is TV. But, you know, I think, yes, obviously, when it happens to somebody who's close to you, then it becomes very real. But I don't know anybody who has, you know, who's been affected on a personal basis. And yet, of course, I still believe this. I mean, I just watched it on TV. I know, you know, you look at the death counts going up. But there's, you know, there is an anti-science bias. This is what our president has stoked. I don't want to make this a political thing. I mean, I think certainly do not want to make Mr. Trump mad because I'll be tweeted at. But I do think that this whole sort of climate science denial, this whole denial of any expert advice, the fact that he will speak and say, you know, and prescribe or, you know, speak to cures that then his doctors that Fauci has to walk back. This sort of anger at the elites, and the elites are the ones who are who have the higher education. How people could feel badly about Fauci? It just seems crazy to me. You know, you have this man is trying to help guide us through this, you know, this terrible time, and he now has to have, you know, federal agents protecting him because, you know, he's somehow, and of course, you know, and this is all an attack. I don't know, Scott, I don't want to get into this sort of, I don't want to get into a politics because at this point, I will say one more thing and then I'll get off the subject. Generally speaking, in a crisis, the country comes together. And in many ways, the country has come together on this. And that speaks to our intelligence, and it speaks to our determination and our values. But there is a political rancor in this country, and it's stoked almost every day, an us against them. And that sort of thing, it's a terrible thing. It would have been like, you know, now I know, Scott, you've got to tell me to stop talking.
No, it's good. I when the guest talks more, that's a good day.
Okay. I mean, I've read a lot, you know, sort of about the Civil War. I've been interested in that, you know, and And Lincoln almost lost the second election. He was hated. He was hated by people. So people calling him all sorts of names and saying what an idiot and a big giant ape he was. The newspapers really almost lost. If he hadn't won a couple of the battles, he would have lost his second election. So it's nothing new that Americans battle one another. But I am just shocked. I'm just shocked that you have a situation where scientists and doctors are telling you something, and we know it works. You look at China and you look at Korea. We know that there are solutions, and some people disregard them, which is what I think you're talking about. You're talking about those people who look at this and somehow pretend or say, "Oh no, I know better. This is not going to happen to me, or these are lies. I don't have to do this." And maybe it's just childishness. It's sort of like, this is invisible, and therefore it's not going to bother me. Head in the sand. Okay, I'm going to stop talking.
Well, John, one of the things is you travel the country a lot as Slim Goodbody, and you're talking about health and things people should do. When you are traveling the country, are you ever met with any kind of resistance?
No, I would say not. I'm just trying to think of the handful of times that anybody has said anything. Full times people will say to me, don't mention vaccinations, because there's that whole sort of anti-vaccine virus, which is going to, Scott, which is going to be very, very interesting. Because when the vaccine for this comes out, I'm going to be curious if the people who are anti-vaccine will take it or not. I'm going to wonder about that.
Well, there's a big question about that. Last night I saw a report, and basically the report said that this could be around, maybe not as bad as it is right now, but for a period of time until the vaccine comes out, and some people are saying that's a year and a half off.
That's right. I think that's what I've heard as well. So, look, on some level, if this is managed, which, everybody believes that it will be, we have to. It's an existential threat. We're gonna get a handle on it. But again, now to go back to the point of, let's talk about the flu. The flu kills 35,000 people a year, right? So it's not that the problem is now we would have sort of two flus out there. If this will eventually become, unless if we get a vaccine, it'll be wiped out and we'll all be home free. If it's not wiped out, it will eventually become like the flu, a seasonal disease. And it will be handled because as soon as hotspots pop up, we will be testing. We will have some remediation through medicine, and it will be handled. But people will die every year. It just will not be at this crisis level where people are overwhelmed. This is sort of... I don't know. I'm just trying to find a comparison. I'm trying to think if this is like wildfires. No, because wildfires still burn out of control. Eventually, I think this will be a controlled thing, and we'll have to live with it. But certainly things are not going to get back to normal. After 9/11, remember? That changed everything. I used to, as you say, I traveled a lot. I used to be able to walk into an airport, and just sort of breeze into onto the plane. 9/11 changed our entire worldview. And this is going to be one of those events as well. People are not going to want to be traveling for a long time, and people are going to be very leery of things. And until we have a vaccine, and then I think we'll all be fine. And in the end, hopefully, we will have learned a lesson. I think, for instance, now, I'm prognosticating. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just making it up just like everybody else. But you look at, after the 2008 banking crisis. You know, theoretically, we learned lessons. Our banking is stronger. The reaction to this catastrophe has been swifter action by Congress and the Fed. So maybe we do learn lessons and we'll be stronger for it. I'll tell you there are a couple of really positive things about this in a sort of horrible way. We're less oil, and so we're polluting the planet less, which will have some health effect for people. We are learning. A friend said to me, and I thought this was really interesting. He said, you know, when we talk about climate, change and stopping, you know, really making drastic cuts to change things. He said, before this disease, we all said, no, people won't do this. You can't mobilize people to make significant changes. Now we know you can mobilize people. Now we know we remember again that for a greater cause, you can mobilize people to do things that they're not comfortable with, staying at home and social distancing. So maybe now we realize that we do have a potential to face another problem and to make sacrifices for a healthier planet. So those two things may come out. I hear also that there'll probably be more babies and more divorces. People learning to live. I've got to say, on one level, I am loving this time with my son. Maybe we will also. This is the way human beings used to live. For all of our history, 150 before the car came, you know, but people lived close together. I don't mean that they couldn't socialize, but people lived close to home. They stayed home. This was humanity. This sort of this close knit things that we're doing now, staying home. I mean, we didn't used to go to stores all the time, you know. People lived on farms and in small villages. So I think there's learning opportunities within this sort of horribleness. And one thing that human beings are good at is that we're primates. We learn. We have very active and curious minds. There will be some very positive outcomes, I believe, from this terrible disease.
John, none of us have a crystal ball. The doctors, the politicians, you or I, we don't have this. But
yeah.
What do you think? Your best guess at this point, from what we know, what we've seen, what is the rest of spring and summer of 2020, in your estimation, going to look like for the American people?
Well, I think that we are going to be in this lockdown situation, if we're smart, and if and I believe in the governors being, you know, more on local control. I would say that my sense is that at least through the end of May, we're going to be pretty much where we are now. I think that towards the end of May, we'll have more testing out, and the hospital theoretically and hopefully, I believe that probe have flattened, as they say, another term that we have now in our vocabulary. And so, you know, the relaxing of standards in certain places, especially because we'll be having tests. One of the terrible things is nobody knows if anybody has it. So you can't begin to build community again, because you can spread it by, you know, being perfectly asymptomatic. And then I think June and July we'll come back. I think by July, it seems to me that everything will be running again slowly. People will be nervous, but they'll start coming back. And I think that, you know, July and August will be tentative, but I think restaurants will be open, for instance. I think that people will be back to work. We may be wearing masks, and we may be tested and washing our hands a whole lot. But by August, we will things will be fairly normal. And then I think that in September or October, as the flu season comes in, it seems to me that people start getting sick. It will, that's where the proof of the pudding is going to be. Have we really, do we know what this is, and can we ameliorate the situation? I think I think by then the crisis will be over, even in September and October. Even if it comes back, I think we will have learned enough so that, you know, we're not going to have people dying and, you know, for lack of respirators in the hospital. I think that we'll be treated more quickly, and we'll have protocols in place, and things will be okay. I think we have a really lousy couple of months, and then I think, you know, we're going to be on our way. But we won't be fully clear, as you say earlier, until we have this vaccine, until people know they're okay.
John, for 45 years, you've been educating children and the people who teach them as Slim Goodbody, traveling the country, television, and things of that nature. You have come up with a video, A Kid's Guide to COVID-19. How did the idea for this come about?
Okay, well, for your listeners who don't know Slim Goodbody, I created a character back in the 70s, where I wore a costume that looked like the inside of the human body, a sort of cartoonish, superhero-ish kind of idea. And I was on Captain Kangaroo, and then I wrote a lot of PBS shows and books and things like that. So I've been involved, as Scott said, in health education for a long time. But I haven't done anything as Slim in at least 2 or 3 years, anything new. I mean, I have a I'm still on Discovery Streaming, and I have a YouTube channel, but I'm producing anything. And it struck me that this was a time that I wanted to use my abilities and my talent to help explain to children what was going on. Because the way I figure is that if parents are afraid, which we are, this has got to be filtering down to the kids, right? Their lives have changed significantly. Now, if a kid is young and parents don't want to talk about it, it's in the air, so to speak. This anxiety is in the air. And nervousness and uncertainty. And if it's affecting parents, it must be affecting their kids, I thought. You know, on some really sort of psychological, as part of health, you know, psychological health is important. And the only antidote that I can provide to that problem is knowledge. I mean, knowledge is, it won't take away the problem, obviously, but it does enlighten and about it, and that does relieve some of the mystery and the unknowns. We are so afraid of the unknown. So I put together an 8-minute video. I was down in the islands, as a matter of fact. I started it down there. I called a cameraman down, and I shot it there, and I went up to a company called Upwork, which you can hire independent contractors by just going online. I found an animator, and I studied. I mean, I've written so much for kids. So much, you know, sort of my talent, I think, is to take complex subjects and to explain them in ways that children would understand. And I built this video. I thought to myself, what is it that kids, you know, what do they need? They certainly need to understand this, but they don't need to be frightened by it. I mean, so the whole idea is you don't panic. People didn't even know what would people find interesting? You know, like COVID-19, many people don't know where, how that name even comes. And for your listeners who don't know, you know, the CO is for corona, the VI is for virus, the D is for disease, and the 19 is for 2019 when it was discovered. I thought if a kid learned that, then they would feel pretty cool. They would sort of know, you know, the name and what it means. Now, that sounds a little, you know, infantile, but, you know, people appreciate learning. So I spoke to what it was, and then I talked about, using tissues and not spreading and about hand washing. The one thing I didn't do in this particular video, I did say, you know, by keeping yourself healthy, you help keep others. I didn't use the term social distancing because I created this 3.5 weeks ago before that was in our vocabulary. But I put it up on YouTube. And if you look it up, A Kid's Guide to COVID-19, it's a good, solid, non-threatening video that that lots and lots of people are seeing now. It's a good thing for parents. You might want to see it for yourself because it's sort of rudimentary explanation, but done with music and animation. But it's a good starting point to show your kids and to start a conversation. And allow it will answer a lot of questions, but more than that, it sort of brings it into the air so that you can talk to your kid in case they're nervous about something.
What do you think will be the impact on children, school age children? They were really the first to be impacted by this daily life because the schools were one of the first places to close. That normally doesn't happen. What's the impact there?
Well, fortunately, children are incredibly resilient, you know, in general. They will take this in their stride. If this went on, you know, if this went on for a year, I think they would be very different. But I think that children will, you know, obviously it also depends upon the age of the child. But, you know, Scott, everything is so bloody complicated in this world because there's so many ramifications on so many levels. For instance, I have a son who's got two kids. One's 3 and not school age, but one's 3 and, you know, and one's 6 months. Now, for them, for the 3-year-old, this is heaven. They get mommy and daddy, you know, 24/7. They're thrilled. I don't think you can have a major event like this for any kid who's maybe 8 years old to 15, where this is not going to have some kind of impact on them. They will have a level of nervousness. I think that's, you know, you just don't have, you know, this scary monster disease and walk away from it without having some lingering effect. I think eventually it will wash away and it will become a memory and people may be more health conscious. They may wash their hands more. I think that for young people like my son's age, who's 21, 18 to 21, I think this will have a profound effect because we all believe we're safe on some level. We just, as you said before, this isn't happening to me, so therefore it doesn't exist. America the strong, you know, it can't happen here. Suddenly people, the rug is pulled out from under people. They say, wait a second, this is not supposed to happen. You know, we're human beings, we're Americans, you know, we're solid. And then something like this occurs and it sends a shockwave. And I think that's going to affect people in terms of their just it's as if there's an earthquake. You know, the solid ground is supposed to be solid ground. It's not supposed to shake, you know, and now what people do with that, I mean, my son Luke, I think he did tell me, we were talking about this the other night, you know, and he did say that expertise in a subject like science, you know, is crucial. So he's very, very, he's not going to be a scientist, but he's very impressed by people stepping up and being able to solve problems. So perhaps it's going to motivate people to just study harder. And I have no idea. I'm just blabbing here, but I think it will have an effect. My father said last day, my father who went through the Depression, he said to me, you know, you never get the, you never get the chill of poverty out of your bones. Now, I think if this were to last a year or more, and we didn't feel we could ever get out of it, that's a difference. And I'm seeing as I'm talking to you, I think here's what I think the difference is from other things. I think nobody believes that we won't eventually get out of this. In the Depression, for instance, I think people lost hope because they had no vision of it actually being solved. And I think we all believe things will get back to normal. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who thinks that 2 years from now we're going to be in this situation. So it's scary, it's shaky, but it's solvable.
John, it occurred to me the other day, because we do these things by year. If you are a college graduate this year, if you are a high school graduate this year, the class of 2020, whenever you say that, whether it's college or high school, will always be the class that had no graduation.
Yep. And, yes. I was in seventh grade, I believe, when somebody came into my classroom and said, Kennedy's been shot. We all raced to our one TV that was in that class, and we all watched that horrible moment. And then there was the towers coming down later, and in 9/11, and then there was, there are these touchstones, aren't there, in life, where this shocking event happens. And I mean, I think of sometimes, I kind of think, especially as I'm getting older, you know, my metaphor kind of life, you know, you're sort of on a boat and you're moving through, and your past is like the wake behind you, you know, it washes away, everything washes away. But every once in a while, some major event, the birth of a child, for instance, for parents, I always know 1998 and 1978. Those are the 2 years my kids were born. We anchor, and yes, so they will say the year 2020 is the year of no graduation. And it will be a cultural touchstone for people. And hopefully they'll look back and say, that was a tough time, but boy, we learned. We learned something, you know. And then 90 years from now, Scott, 100 years from now, nobody will even remember. You know, it'll be in the history books like the Spanish flu. It'll be the, you know, COVID-19. And so let's not lose perspective. You know, we have handled these crises. They pass. People move on. It's interesting, though, isn't it, Scott, that some of the other, it's not interesting, I mean, it's sort of explainable, but I think about some of the other things we were so focused on before COVID-19 hit, and then suddenly nobody remembers those anymore. Think about all your problems. Think about what you were thinking before you became, you know, self-isolating, you know. What were you thinking about as your big problem of the day, you know? And suddenly, you can't even remember anymore. So,
John, that's an interesting thing, because as we move through this, not that we're close to the end of it, I don't know that we are, but this occurred to me just yesterday, that there were people, a lot of them young, a lot of them older, but it seemed to be younger people, maybe single moms, single parents, who their big problem before this was paying the bills. They were running low, running behind, so on and so forth. Now, this has caused a bit of a break, because health always trumps money problems.
Yep.
And all the and this is so impactful to people that usually the utility companies, the mortgage companies, the stimulus check, during this time, those people are kind of safe at the moment. Now, when it's all over, then what happens?
I don't know. And, you know, I know that they're safe, but boy, you know, that getting all this money out to people. I mean, yes, the people who release mortgages and stuff like that, and you can't be evicted. Those can take effect immediately. We have, Scott, I mean, I'll tell your listeners now, I am much more on a liberal bent than I am on a conservative bent, I mean, in terms of politically, in the sense that I believe that we have that this income disparity that we have in this country, that I don't believe that people can work really hard. I just don't believe that, for instance, Mike Bloomberg, and I, you know, good guy, seems to me perfectly fine individual. He certainly, you know, put a lot of money into good causes. Whether or not you agree with the causes, at least he's spending, you know, a lot of his billions on, supporting people around the country and not spending the money on himself. But he has more money than 154 million Americans. Now think about that. One guy has more money than 154 million people. That's crazy. Especially because people, the single moms and hardworking young people are working two and three jobs or, you know, two jobs to just barely make a living. Who the hell can earn a living at the federal minimum wage? What is that, $7.50 or $8 an hour? I mean, think about that. $320 a week. So the problems that we have that these people are going to have to face when they get out of this disease, when this moves forward, when they go back to their regular life, are systemic problems in our society where it's as if we expect poor people to somehow pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And I mean, I believe everybody ought to work. I'm not one of the people who think you should, you know, be doling out, you know, money to people sitting around in the corner drinking beer and, you know, I mean, but that's not what this is about. I mean, there is, never mind. I'll go completely off topic on this one.
It's a big topic. There's no doubt about it. John, right, obviously we want people to watch the video, and again, if you go to YouTube, it is Slim Goodbody Presents.
You can look up Slim Goodbody, S-L-I-M, and then Goodbody, G-O-O-D-B-O-D-Y. And then Slim Goodbody probably at YouTube, Slim Goodbody YouTube. And it is right on the front page. It's right on, as soon as you get to my the YouTube site. Or you can look up A Kid's Guide to COVID-19 and it will come up.
Perfect. Now, John, one of the things I want to ask you before we wrap this up here in about a minute. In your estimation, what right now is the most important thing? Anybody listening, and they're going to watch the video, but that a parent or a guardian can tell a kid right now about what's going on?
That it will get better, that we are going through, I think maybe to just make a comparison to, well, it's a great question, Scott, I hadn't thought through that, but I think that they compare it to being sick, which it's not a bar, we're not far off on that analogy, and like when you get sick, you have to go to bed, which is staying in your house, and you have to drink plenty of fluids, and you have to try to do your best to stay healthy, which is washing your hands. And that, just like in any illness, it requires some, you know, treatment. But, you know, we all get better, and we will get better. And, of course, there's another analogy, too. If you break your arm, for instance, and you have to put it in a cast, once it's healed, it heals stronger than new. So we may, in fact, come through this being better than we were. But certainly, I think the key message is we will be fine. We will be fine. It's okay. You know, yes, it's strange. Yes, it's scary, maybe. Yes, you can't be with all of your friends. everything will be okay, and we are all in this together.
Slim Goodbody, A Kid's Guide to COVID-19. Go to YouTube, watch it, very important. John Burstein, best known as Slim Goodbody for the last 45 years. John, thank you so much for the video, and thanks so much for coming on with us.
Hey, Scott, thank you very much. And just for parents, there's a ton of stuff on that YouTube. So if you're looking for kids, it's all free, you know, obviously. So if you're looking for to have your kids learn about their body or anatomy or about health or even reading, there's a good series up there. There's plenty of resources to use. And thanks, everybody. Keep safe. And we'll see you on the other side of this this COVID-19.
Absolutely. The thing we're in. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
John Burstein, best known as Slim Goodbody, started back on the Captain Kangaroo show and then did his own show and toured around the country for nearly 45 years. Remember, A Kid's Guide to COVID-19, Slim Goodbody, on YouTube. Absolutely free. Check it out. Be back in about 10 minutes.
Harry Busey, LaToya Jackson, Jose Canseco, some of the really, really big names from Celebrity Apprentice, and I think it really, really is.
To 40th Treasurer of the United, Ellen Withrow, commenting Hillary Clinton,
do you have...